Before we actually begin the text, just a little bit of a general background and a specific background. The general background is just an approach to Navi that we need to know beyond our perhaps elementary school perspective. Chazal tell us that there were more than 1.2 million Nevi'im over the course of the Tekufa of Nevi'us. Right, more than double the amount that went out of Mitzrayim. So there are well over a million Nevi'im, of which we have reference to about, Chazal say 48. There's some differences exactly who they are. You know, if you really stretch it, perhaps we could get the numbers up a little bit. But there aren't much more than 48 Nevi'im that we even know of their existence. Why? So the Gemara tells us that those Nevi'us that were needed Lidoros were recorded, and those that were not needed Lidoros were not recorded. Most of the Nevi'im dealt with contemporary issues, were not necessary for us to know about it in future generations. The obvious implication of that is that anything we find in Navi is necessary for us to know for future generations. So we can't view anything in Navi as simply a story, a history. Navi is not a history book, even though it tells you history. Everything that's there is to teach us a lesson for future generations. We may not always get the message. So not every prat, every detail will we always be able to explain. That's not because there's no explanation. It only means that we haven't reached a conclusion. So we need to understand that any detail, anything that's mentioned in Navi, could have been part of the 1,900,000 or whatever thousand Nevi'im that were left out. And if it's here, then it's vital, it's an important message for us today. Now the historical setting, beginning of Sefer Melachim, the Rishonim say basically that Sefer Shmuel is the story of Shmuel and David HaMelech. Sefer Melachim begins with Shlomo HaMelech and all the future kings. A little bit of a problem in that it doesn't quite begin with Shlomo HaMelech. We start with some leftovers of David. So the first major incident in Sefer Melachim is the rebellion of Adoniyahu, who tried to proclaim himself as a king, and that really makes sense because that really is the story of Shlomo. Because as a result of Adoniyahu's rebellion, it will come out and we'll get into the details, that David HaMelech took the unusual step of appointing Shlomo as a king while David was still alive. So the beginning of the story of Shlomo really began with the rebellion of Adoniyahu. But we have a few psukim before that, which is the story of David getting old, and he was cold, he couldn't keep himself warm, and the various things that they did that seemed to really not have anything to do with Shlomo and really more logically belong in Sefer Shmuel. The Malbim explains that this may have also been part of the story of Adoniyahu. There's a major question on Adoniyahu. Adoniyahu proclaimed himself king. He had some very substantial support. He was supported by Yoav, who was the general. He was supported by Avyasar, who was the Kohen Gadol. And apparently he was supported by most of the elite of Klal Yisrael. If he knew that he had that level of support, the smart thing to do would have been to wait until David HaMelech died. Shlomo says, David made me king. And then Adoniyahu says, no, David made me king. Dead person can't contradict you. And he'll have Yoav and Avyasar on his side, and then, you know, fight it out, see who wins. But to proclaim yourself king while David is still alive, and all David has to do is make some kind of public announcement, and you're finished. Which is exactly what happened. David made a public announcement, it was all over for Adoniyahu's rebellion. Why take that risk? So the Malbim explains that this was Adoniyahu's strategy, and we'll get into a very interesting, I don't think we'll make it this week, but a little bit later, a different explanation of Adoniyahu's strategy. But according to the Malbim, the reason why Adoniyahu did this was because he saw that David was beginning to lose control. He was zakein, baba yamim, he was cold, he had problems, and he was hopeful that because of that, David wouldn't take any action. And if that would happen, that would strengthen his hand. Because if he proclaimed himself king while David was alive, and David didn't object, that's a haskama. That's an endorsement. And will make his position all that much stronger. So he felt it was worth taking the risk to get this implicit endorsement from David HaMelech and the hopes that David was zakein baba yamim and wasn't going to take any action to stop him. Right, let's get into the psukim themselves. The story begins, if you want to call it that. HaMelech David zakein baba yamim. David was old, coming along in his days. They covered him up with clothing, with garments, and he could not get warm. Now, just to analyze the expression, David Zakein Baba Yamin, what does that mean? He was, first of all, before you even get to that, it begins with the word Vahamelech David Zakein Baba Yamin. The king David was old. Of course, we're starting from Malachim. So it's quite possible we opened up Sefer Malachim, you guys didn't know that David was the king. But if you learned Sefer Shmuel, you would know that by now. Why does the pasuk need to say HaMelech David? Obviously, David was the king. Even if you didn't learn Shmuel, you sing the song, David, Melech Yisrael, I mean, everyone knows that. So how could it be that, why is it necessary to say HaMelech David? The Medrash says, very interesting use of words in the Medrash. The Medrash says that in the Umas HaOlam, in the nations of the world, when a person gets old, Dome LeKof, they treat him like a monkey. They view him as a, you know, less than you. He's an old man, he's a burden. He says, that not so by Klal Yisrael. He says, Afal Pi Shehu Zaken Melech Haya. Even though David was old, they treat him like a king. He was a melech. We have a certain feeling or attitude of respect towards our elders, even though in today's society perhaps that's been weakened somewhat. But sof kol sof, Klal Yisrael is very different than the Umas HaOlam. Vamelech David Zakein Baba Yamim. The reason why I find that expression kof to be very interesting is because it brings to mind a very famous story of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. And you may have heard the story. The Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was traveling, I believe, to Eretz Yisrael on a plane, or from Eretz Yisrael, with a grandchild. And the grandchild was extremely solicitous of Rav Yaakov, taking care of him, running here and there, trying to make sure he was as comfortable as possible, taking care of every need. Rav Yaakov was sitting next to another man, probably similar age, who was a secular professor, leader, thinker. And you know, they were engaged in debate, but you know, pretty negative kind of reaction he was getting. But at one point, this man said to Rav Yaakov, "I don't understand. How is it that your grandchild is so caring, so concerned about it? My grandchildren don't want to give me time of day. If I show up, I'm a burden. If they have to put up with me, they put up with me. But they would never do this." So he said, "I don't really know what your question is." He says, "You're an atheist. So you believe in evolution, so who are you? You're a couple of generations closer to a monkey. So why should your grandchildren have any care about you? But we believe in the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and we believe in Matan Torah. I'm a couple of generations closer to Har Sinai. That's why my grandchildren react that way." So I don't know if the Medrash was alluding to the future theories of evolution, but it's quite interesting. Doma Lakof, you're closer to a monkey. People, they don't care. But we have that, you know, that attitude of kavod for the zakenim. Now, what about this expression, Baba Yamin, Zakein Baba Yamin? The simple meaning of it is that a person, Zakein, doesn't really necessarily refer to age, but it refers to physical status, so to speak. A person who, you know, has the outward signs of age is called a zakein. You know, it is possible for a person to age prematurely. Right? Whatever it is, if you have grandchildren like that guy on the plane, it could be that it helps you age a little bit earlier. So Zakein Baba Yamin means he was aged, he was showing signs of age, but he was Baba Yamin. He came with his days, coming along in his days, it wasn't premature. But the various Mefarshim seal and the Chazal see a little bit more in that. There's a medrash that says, "Yesh zaken ve'eno ein lo yamim, ve'yesh yamim ve'ein lo zaken." In Bereishis Rabbah, there is such a thing as a zaken who does not have days, and there is such a thing as somebody who has days and is not a zaken. And the Gra, Vilna Gaon, explains this. He says that a person lives a certain amount of time, but the question is, what does he do with that time? A person who lived many years but didn't really accomplish anything with his life is chronologically zaken, but what does he have to show for all those years and days that he spent on this planet? Zaken baba yama means he's old, but he comes with days. He could bring his days and say, I did something on this day. I did Torah and mitzvahs, I accomplished something. I accomplished something on this day. Every day potentially could be meaningful. Every day potentially could be wasted. So if a person lives for a long time but hasn't done much, he may only have a few days. There's a joke that makes the rounds about marriage, but I would extend it to life. There's a guy celebrating his 30th wedding anniversary. And they make a big celebration. He says, oh, you must have had a happy marriage. He said, yeah, we've had at least 2 years of happy marriage. So a person could live 80 years. He only really lived a year or two because those are the days that he did something. Me'idah kisa, a person could perhaps not be so old but utilized every day. He's got more days to his credit than the one who's older than him. So zaken isn't enough. You have to be baba yamim. And I heard a story that gives a real perspective on this. I heard this story from Diane Wasner, but not the famous Diane Wasner, B'nai Brak, his son. He has a son who is a Diane in London, England. And his son related a story that he was once judging a Din Torah for the sum of £2 million. This is before the euro. I don't know exactly how that translates out into dollars, but you can imagine that's a lot of money. What happened? There was an individual who was what you would call a self-made man. He didn't really have much of an education. I know it was because of the war, but you know, he worked hard, built up a business from scratch, you know, the old-fashioned way, and saved up money and ended up with, after 30 years, with £2 million. He went into a partnership with another individual and it went sour, and he was accusing this other individual basically of stealing the money. So there was a Din Torah. So when the fella came to the Din Torah, his opening statement was, this Din Torah is not about £2 million, it's about 30 years of my life. And Diane Wasner said when he heard that, it made a tremendous rosh, and he understood that the guy was telling the truth. This is what he lives for. 30 years he lived for the sole purpose of building up his business, perhaps wanted to leave an estate to his children, whatever his motives were. So what did he have to show for 30 years of his life? £2 million. The guy stole it. He didn't just steal £2 million, which I guess is bad enough. I wouldn't know, I never had £2 million. But he literally stole 30 years of his life. Diane Wasner went on to say, you know, he began to understand what we mean when we say, Kihem chayenu v'aruch yemenu. The Torah is our life, v'aruch yemenu. Not necessarily the Torah makes us live long. The Torah makes us baba yamim. If we live our life and we do something, we learn, we do mitzvahs, even if we work, but we do it l'shem shemayim, and we do it in such a way that it's Torah, then it can never be taken away from us. So then we have a long life. Heim chayenu v'aruch yemenu. But if all we live for is our money, so if some, you know, clever guy comes and of course it's never going to happen to us because we're too smart. But if somebody comes and takes our money, they took our life. What else do we have to show for it? Heim chayenu v'aruch yemenu. Bo bayomim. So that's what the pasuk is saying. Hamelech David Zaken Baba Yamim. He came with his days. Nobody could take those days away from him. They were meaningful. They were full of Torah and mitzvahs. He accomplished something. That's a life. That's a zaken. But to just be old chronologically, we still don't know how long you lived. Your birth certificate may show 80 years. In the Cheshvan in Shemayim, it might be a Chas V'Shalom, a lot less. So David was Zakein Baba Yamin. Sefer Musar Nevi'im quotes from Kochav Miyakov. I don't know who the Kochav Miyakov is. I do know who the Musar Nevi'im was, a Talmud of Slobodka. So if you're familiar with Chavetz Chaim, Chavetz Chaim is big on Slobodka. So I assume if I quote him, I'm safe. He brings from the Sefer that just an interesting textual diuk. Where this comes from, Baba Yamim, also based on the Chazal say that by David HaMelech, Baba Yamim, he came to the days of age, where we have another pasuk that says, Ad Shelo Yavo Yemei Hara, which refers to old age as Yemei Hara, Ad Shelo Yavo Yemei Hara. David HaMelech came to these days with Simcha. And he says, how does this diuk, where do you see, I mean, it's sort of related to the same idea. Why did he come to these days with Simcha? Because he knew he had something to show for all his days on this earth. So the diuk, he says, is as follows. Ba bayamin means you came to your days. The pasuk in Koheles that he quotes, Ad shelo yavo yemei hara, the days come to you. When you're looking for something with eagerness, anticipation, you run after it. But when there's something that you don't want, you try to avoid it. It follows you. It goes to you. So Baba Yamim indicates you came to your days. I'm happy with my old age. I know I have something to show for my life. Ad Shelo Yavo Yemei Hara is a person who wasted his life and all of a sudden he's too old to do anything about it and he's running away. He's afraid of that. So Yavo, the days come to him. Okay, we find... I have to see if we could at least finish one pasuk today. I think we'll make it. We find that the pasuk continues that David HaMelech, when he reached this old age, vayechatsu b'begadav lo yecham lo, they covered him with clothing and he was not warm. There are different explanations in Chazal as to why this happened. It's important to note from the fact that Chazal do give these explanations, and their indications in the Psukim later, where they probably got it from, was we shouldn't view David as some kind of a infirm, weak, helpless old man who's cold and weak and can't do anything. That wasn't the state of David HaMelech. And even though we said the Malbim suggested it was Adoniyahu's strategy, it wasn't because David was weak and helpless, it's just that he didn't have the same power that he had before, and he didn't have the same communication, as we'll see later, that David was somewhat isolated at this point, and it was hopeful that he either wouldn't hear about it, wouldn't do anything about it, but to think that David was old and helpless is not so. He had one problem, that he was cold, chronically cold, and he couldn't warm up. So where did that come from? So there's a medrash that says, towards the end of Sefer Shmuel, we have the very, very strange incident where David counted Klal Yisrael directly, insisted on the census, and although Yoav tried to argue with him not to do it, he didn't listen. He did it anyway, something which is prohibited by the Torah. And along came a plague, or he was given a choice, actually, of different punishments, and he chose the plague. Vayomer David al God Sar Li Maod Niplana Biyad Hashem Ki Rabin Rachamav Biyad Adam Alapola. So David chose to fall directly in the hands of Hashem and to have this plague. It's interesting to note just Derech Agav what was going on there. It was clearly some thought that was put into his head Min Hashemayim. It doesn't make sense that David should make such a stupid mistake. And Chazal tell us that it was actually a punishment to David. What's more perplexing is why should Klal Yisrael suffer because of David's mistake? And there are various explanations, but one I'd like to share with you is the Ramban. The Ramban actually says this in the Chumash. Ramban says that Klal Yisrael was being punished at that time for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu considered to be a chet. What was that? They did not build the Beis HaMikdash. Right? They had already, more or less, towards the end of David's career, had peace from the enemies round about. It was the proper time to build the Beis HaMikdash. And we know that David HaMelech, in fact, had the idea that he wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash, and the Navi told him not to do it. Why couldn't David build the Beis HaMikdash? Because since he engaged in so many battles and so much war, there was blood on his hands, even though it was appropriate blood. But sof kol sof, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want the Beis HaMikdash to come from that. Says the Ramban, but that was only a problem because it was David's initiative to build the Beis HaMikdash. But had there been a grassroots movement, and Kali Yisrael would have come with petitions or would have come with suggestions and said, David, let's build the Beis HaMikdash, it wouldn't have been considered that David is building the Beis HaMikdash, but Kali Yisrael is building the Beis HaMikdash. And in Kali Yisrael there is no problem. If Kali Yisrael wants to build the Beis HaMikdash, it could be built. So since they did not take the initiative, it was left to the hands of David. David couldn't do it, so it had to be delayed until the rule of Shlomo. So they were responsible for delaying building the Beis HaMikdash. And Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Hanoch Leibowitz, pointed out that if you think about it, it's quite interesting because there is no individual private citizen who could hope to build a Beis HaMikdash. As a private individual, you're not in charge. So what are you going to do? Build, you know, today you have these groups, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, they're trying to at least make the kelim with the Beis HaMikdash, build the Beis HaMikdash. All right, maybe you can make a few kelim on your own. Nobody's going to stop you. You can't build the Beis HaMikdash on your own. So you need David HaMelech. Everybody in Kali Yisrael knows David HaMelech is a tzaddik, he's a Talmud Chacham, there's a Sanhedrin around, there's a Kohen Gadol around. I can't do anything about this. The people in charge are very competent, very well equipped. If it's right to build a Beis HaMikdash in Rustama, they would do it. So it's very easy for a private citizen to say, it's not my geschäft, it's not my business, what am I supposed to do about that? So I should go ahead and build a Beis HaMikdash. I have to start tumulting. Leave it up to the gedolim, leave it up to the leaders. What we see from here is there's no such thing. Every Jew has responsibility for all of Kal Yisrael, whether you could do anything about it or not. If you can't do anything about it, at least you can make some noise. Make some suggestions. Talk to your friends. Talk to the leaders. You know, if in the end of the day they would have come to David HaMelech with their suggestions, they would have tumulted, and then David would have said, you know what, it's not the right time. So, all right, you did yours. You're not supposed to go to war. That's what, you know, the leaders are the leaders. But you can't sit back and say, oh, it's in good hands. Baruch Hashem, you know, the Talmidim of our yeshiva don't have that problem. They always come to me with suggestions of the way we should do things right. But the point is that a person shouldn't feel it's beyond my scope. Even if it is beyond your scope. Not to, you should take on more than you could do. But you could always make suggestions. You could always be ma'orer. You could always talk. If all Kali Yisrael would have, everything would have been done the same way. David HaMelech would have organized everything. David HaMelech would have been in charge. David HaMelech would have done whatever he needed to do to build the Beis HaMikdash. But if they would have only been ma'orer, they would have suggested it, the idea would have come from the people, it wouldn't have been stamped with David's name, and it would have been done. And they sat back, relied on the leadership, and as a result of that, that was their end of the bargain. But Yia Masha Yia, at that point in time when this plague occurred, Chazal say David saw the Malach Hashem with a sword outstretched over Yerushalayim, and that sight was so chilling that he never warmed up from it. That's the reason, according to the first shot in the Medrash, why he was unable to be one. Not because he was infirm or weak, but because of that experience of seeing that Malach. A second interpretation, this one is in the Gemara as well. The lashon of the Gemara is called hamivazes habegadim. Anybody who treats begadim with bizayon, with disdain, eino nehanemehem, will not benefit from them. The implication is, we know there's a concept of hakaras hatov, of gratitude towards inanimate objects. Like Chazal say, a well that you drank water from, you shouldn't throw a stone into. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't allowed to hit the water for the Makkas because the water saved him when he was floating on the Nile. He wasn't allowed to hit the sand because the sand saved him when he was able to bury the Mitzri. So there's a concept that even towards inanimate objects, you have to show a certain derech eretz, a certain hakar satov, and there's a tfiyah, a taina, a criticism, it seems, of David for not showing proper respect to clothing. What was the story? What did David do that did not show proper respect to clothing? Earlier, when David was a fugitive, Shaul HaMelech got the idea in his head that David was trying to rebel. In fact, David had been appointed to be Shaul's successor, but he wasn't doing anything about it. He wasn't at all in rebellion, but that was not something that Shaul was ready to accept. And he was pursuing David. And according to Chazal, this was the most formidable enemy that David ever faced. Because when David gives Shira at the end of Sefer Shmuel, he says, Miyad Shaul, Miyad Kol Oivav. He thanks Hashem for saving him from Shaul and from all his enemies. And Shaul was equal to all the other enemies put together. So this was a very difficult time for David. And he was on the run. And at one time, when Shaul was there with some of his followers, and they were chasing David, and they went to sleep for the night, and David was able to infiltrate the camp of Shaul HaMelech, and literally standing over Shaul sleeping. He could have killed Shaul at that time. He didn't want to do it because Shaul was the Melech. So what he did was he cut off a corner of Shaul's garment and left. In the morning, David went onto a different hill so he'd be at a safe distance and called across to Shaul and showed him, look, Shaul, you look at your garment, you see a corner is cut off. I have the piece. So you know that I could have killed you and I didn't. Doesn't that clearly indicate that I'm not a rebel? And for the moment, Shaul accepted that argument and was ready to make peace. David was too smart to go back to Shaul's camp. He knew it may not last. Eventually, what happened was Doeg Haradomi, who was the chief of Sanhedrin at that time and was basically David's main enemy, persuaded Shaul that that's not what happened. He persuaded Shaul that when you were going through the bushes, you didn't realize your coat got caught on a thorn bush and tore it off a piece. David happened to find the piece, and now he's opportunistically trying to take advantage of that. That was so. Eventually, Shaul disbelieved the story, but the motive of David was to demonstrate to Shaul he's not a rebel, to try to basically make shalom and protect his own life. Why is that being mevaze begadim? One would think that that was an extremely noble, tremendous mitzvah, great thing that he did. So what is going on? Why is it that as a result of such a tremendous mitzvah, such a noble action, so Chazal say, call him avazes abegadim sofesh alon neanemeh, as if David ends up not getting hanav. So I'd like to suggest two possible ways of understanding it, because I have to take one side, because there is a machlokus in the world between, in the recent times, I don't know if it goes back earlier, between various gedolim, how to approach this chazal. Perhaps, I don't know if they specifically talk about this chazal, but similar such stories. One opinion, and one of the proponents of that opinion is Rav Chaim Shmulevitz Zatzal, says that in the world of Ruchnius, there's such a thing as what I guess we would call a cause and effect. If a person sticks his hand in a fire, your hand is going to get burnt. It's not a punishment. That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Even if you were completely correct and did everything right and you were supposed to stick your hand in the fire, it's still going to get burnt. True, there are nisim that happen from time to time. You know, Avraham Avinu went into the furnace and didn't get burnt. That's a nes. If you would have gone into the furnace and got burnt, you wouldn't consider that a punishment. That's the way it is. That's the way the world was created. In the world of Ruchnius, says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, there's such a thing as well. That if a person does something, it has consequences. You were mevazeh begadim for a very good reason, but it still has consequences. He went into the fire. The example Rav Chaim Shmulevitz talks about, amongst others, is Yaakov and Esau. Yaakov took the bracha that Esav wanted to get. We know that Yaakov was 100% correct in doing what he did. It was alpi nevua, alai kilascha b'ni, says Rivka. He was entitled to the bracha. He bought the bechora. He did the right thing. It says that Esav cried. Because Esav cried, say Chazal, that's why Rome was able to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, the descendants of Esav. He said Esav cried, I think it was two tears, and the third tear got stuck in his eye. It didn't come out. As I'll say, if that third tier would have come out, there would have been nothing left of Kal Yisrael. It says, Vayizak, Esav cried, Zaka Gadol Amara. So Mordechai cried, Vayizak, Zaka Gadol Amara. The descendants of Esav were able to prevail at a certain point, at least to some extent, over Yaakov. But Yaakov did the right thing. So, says Rechaim Shalevitz, it's true you did the right thing. But there's still consequences. You cause pain to another person, that pain comes back. You cause bizoyon, that comes back. There's a story which I think is very instructive, which perhaps gets into the two shittas. I hope we'll have time to develop it. There was a tremendous machlokas that took place in the time of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer about Hilchos Tumah V'Tara, a certain type of oven. And Rabbi Eliezer refused to back down from his position, even though the majority had voted against him. And Gamliel felt that this was going to cause divisions in Kal Yisrael, and he put Rabbi Eliezer in Cherem. Rabbi Eliezer remained in that Cherem until he died, because he never retracted, never backed down from his position. The Gemara tells us shortly after Rabbi Gamliel did this, Rabbi Gamliel was on a boat on the way to Rome, and immediately a storm arose that threatened the boat. And Rabbi Gamliel realized that this was connected. Rabbi Gamliel got up on the deck of the boat and said, Ribbono Shel Olam, you know very well, ki lo lechavodi yasisi, lo lechavod beis abba. I didn't do what I did for my own honor, and I didn't do it for the honor of my father's house. El lechavod chasisi, I did it for your honor. L'man lo yarve machlokas b'Yisrael, there shouldn't be divisions amongst Kal Yisrael. When he said that, the storm stopped. If the storm stopped, I think it is reasonable to assume that Rabbi Gamliel was telling the truth. I think it's reasonable to assume that anyway. He didn't do it for his own kavod, he didn't do it for kavod beis abba. The Gemara goes on to say, Rabbi Eliezer was not only an Adam Gadol, he was also Rabbi Gamliel's brother-in-law. He was married to Rabbi Gamliel's sister. From the day that Rabbi Eliezer was put into Cherem, his wife, which was Rabbi Gamliel's sister, used to disrupt him every time he came to Tachanun. Wouldn't let Rabbi Eliezer daven Tachanun in peace. So one day, she thought it was a 2-day Rosh Chodesh, and it was really only a 1-day Rosh Chodesh. She thought there was no Tachanun, so she didn't hang around when davening, and she walks in, she sees Rabbi Eliezer is saying Tachnun. Says immediately she tore her garment, and she said, "Shema mina nach nafshe de Rabbi Gamliel, my brother died." And sure enough, at that moment, Rabbi Gamliel died. What's the significance of Tachnun? We don't know what the significance of Tachnun. Tachnun is the thing that we rejoice when we don't have to say it. Isn't it an amazing thing? Like, not like, I mean, Monday and Thursday I understand, but the other days it's a little thing, you know. No Tachnun today. Oh, but Tachnun, as opposed to the other parts of the tefillah, why do we put our head down? Tachnun is supposed to be an outpouring of the pain in our heart. Different than regular tefillah, which is also a certain sin, but that's why you put your head down. You put your head down to cry. Believe it or not, it's not just. So, the wife of Rabbi Eliezer, the sister of Rabbi Gamliel, understood that Rabbi Eliezer was suffering a great deal of pain because he was put into Cherem. If he would express that pain, then there will be a consequence. Now, we know that Rabbi Gamliel did nothing wrong, or so it would appear. Lo lichvod yasisi, lo lichvod beis abba. So he didn't do anything wrong. Why did he die? Because if Rabbi Lezer expresses his pain, there's a consequence. There's a fire. You're in the fire, you get burnt. This is what Rabbi Chaim Shalevitz says. So I don't know if he applies it to this case, but one could apply it to this case, perhaps, that David did everything he did correctly and properly. But he treated, Lemaisa, he treated Kalding with disrespect, for a good reason. So there's a consequence. And the consequence was he couldn't get warm from it. One might wonder why we don't suffer similar consequences. I assume the explanation is because sometimes you're beyond that. You know, when there's enough other cheshbonos, these things sort of get subsumed in the entire picture. We don't get, cheshbonos doesn't deal with us as precisely and as exactly as he does with others. But it still doesn't necessarily mean that it's a punishment. Right? The cause and effect gets clouded when our relationship is clouded. There's many other factors involved. But yia mashe yia, that's a potential explanation. There's another school of thought, and my Rebbe happens to be from the other school of thought, that there is no such thing. Less dina below dina. There is no judge without justice. And according to that view, and I said I have to take that side, it's not so. Even when an action is correct, it doesn't necessarily mean it's judgment-free. And the Bali Musar teach us that if you do the right thing, but you don't necessarily have the right kavana, the right feelings, there can be a tviya too. And although Yaakov did the right thing in taking the bracha to Esau, but he should have had a feeling of, oy, I feel bad for my brother. Maybe he did, but maybe it wasn't sufficient. There was something to blame him for. It wasn't done with quite the heart and quite the feeling and quite the state of mind that it should be. The Mesiras Yesharim tells us that the Gemara says that if a person has difficulties in life, he's supposed to search his deeds. There are two expressions, two lashonos in the Gemara, yefashvesh b'masav and yemashmesh b'masav. So the Mesiras Yesharim explains yefashvesh means to search, to look, to observe. Are your actions correct or incorrect? Yemashmesh means to feel. When you have, for example, a piece of cloth and you want to feel if the cloth is solid, by looking at it you can't always tell, but you feel it with your hands and you can tell. That means you have an action which is the correct thing to do. And by looking at it you can't tell that there's anything wrong, but if you feel it, you can see that there's something wrong, the kavanas aren't proper. Because it was not a problem in yefashvesh b'masav, it was a problem in yemashmesh b'masav. And if you look at the story of Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Gamliel, I think I could bring a certain siyua to my Rebbe's view. Not that he needs my siyua, but I have to give the shir, so what can I do? The Gemara story is kind of peculiar. If it is in fact true that Rabbi Gamliel did everything l'shem shemayim, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu bring the storm in the first place? Hashem brings the storm. Rabbi Gamliel says, "I did it l'shem shemayim." Says, "Okay, you're right." So then, why did you bring the storm? It seems to me that it could very well be that the pshat is, of course, Rabbi Gamliel did it l'shem shemayim, but he didn't have the full realization and awareness of what he was doing. This is Rabbi Elazar you're talking about. This is a gadol hador. Do you know what kind of pain you're inflicting upon him? Are you crying for him? Of course I'm crying for him, but are you crying enough? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt it necessary to demonstrate to Rabbi Gamliel the enormity of what he did. In fact, he was right. And perhaps had he fully realized what he was doing, he would have done the same thing. But he would have done it, he would have cried a little more, he would have lost a little more sleep. I'm sure he lost sleep. And I'm sure he cried. But it would have been a little bit more. And that was the time of Rabbi Gamliel. And because of that, he was susceptible to the expression of pain of Rabbi Elazar, because he was responsible to some extent for it. Not because he did the wrong thing. Of course he did the right thing. And it wasn't L'chlodo, and it wasn't L'chlod Beit Abba. But did he have sufficient feeling of what he was doing to Rabbi Eliezer? And in some way, to some small level, we would perhaps say that there was some kind of a Tainan Yaakov too, to some extent. Are you sufficiently aware of what you're doing? And I believe that's how we would explain the Shita, how we explain the Mice of David as well. And I would suggest also, to side with my Rebbe, that the Lashon of Bizayon sort of supports that view. If it was simply a cause and effect, it seems a little harsh and a little strange to use a term called Mevaza. It wasn't Mevaza. He was using the beggar for a good purpose. You could have said perhaps call him Mezalzel B'Begadim, or call him Pogame B'Begadim. Chais, you did something bad to the B'Begadim. But to say I embarrassed it, I humiliated it, the beggar would have volunteered to save David's life. You know, there's a halacha, for example, that you're not allowed to destroy something for no purpose. It's batashvis. But if you have a purpose, a constructive purpose in destroying it, a legitimate purpose, then it's not batashvis. So what's the pshat? You were batashvis, but you did it for a reason. It wasn't about, you're not wasting it. So you're not really being mevazeh. What I would suggest, perhaps, according to this view, the pshat would be, perhaps everyone would agree here, that the pshat would be that the Tainan David was apparently he wasn't sufficiently sensitive or aware of what he was doing. He was so excited, he had such a great opportunity to try to make shalom, it didn't sufficiently register in him, but you know what? Look what you're doing, a beggar, you have to have a karsa tov to a beggar, what are you doing? He said, I know, but I have to do it anyway. There wasn't enough feeling in it. So that's being, to a certain level, on David HaMelech Madrega, that's considered being Mevazeh Beged. You should have had more covet, you should have had more respect. We should have done the same thing. But with a little bit of a different feeling, a little bit of a different attitude. So Kol HaMevazeh HaBegadim, of course, again, this is David HaMelech, I don't think we're held quite to that standard, but it's a lesson for us as well, that even when we are convinced that we're doing the right thing, and even if we are doing the right thing, it doesn't necessarily excuse us from having sensitivity to the impact, perhaps, that we're having, or to what, in effect, we're doing. Sometimes, when we do the right thing, it does cause pain and difficulty to another person. Sometimes you have to do it anyway. So you have to feel bad about it. Still do the right thing. But it must be done with the right feeling. So perhaps the problem that David had was at some, and you could certainly appreciate why this could happen. You can imagine, you know, the David is running for his life. David has such tzaras from Shaul, and here he has this opportunity, and he thought of this idea. He must have been very excited about it, and it was l'shem shemayim. He's trying to make shalom, trying to save Shaul from the chayt, trying to save his own life. It's very easy to be so caught up in the wonderful thing that you're doing that you overlooked, but you should have a certain feeling. Oh, I have to cut a garment. Karsatov, a boar that you drank from, you don't throw a stone into. Now, suppose there was a boar that you drank from, and you had to throw a stone into it in order to save a life, in order to make shalom and klal yisrael. Of course, you would throw the stone into it, but you should at the same time feel it's too bad I had to do that. I had to throw a stone in this boar that I drank from. And if he didn't feel that sufficiently, there's a taina. So therefore, at this stage of his life, he was punished according to this view, that he was unable to be warmed up by the begadim.